Osho, Zarathustra, a God that can dance. Commentaries on Friedrich Nietzsche's Thus Spake Zarathustra, given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India. Discourse number one.
Beloved Bhagwan, when Zarathustra was 30 years old, he left his home and the lake of his home and went into the mountains. Here he had the enjoyment of his spirit and his solitude, and he did not weary of it for 10 years. But at last his heart turned, and one morning he rose with the dawn, stepped before the sun, and spoke to it thus: "Great star, what would your happiness be if you had not those for whom you shine? You have come up here to my cave for 10 years. You would have grown weary of your light and of this journey without me, my eagle, and my serpent. But we waited for you every morning, took from you your superfluity, and blessed you for it. Behold, I am weary of my wisdom, like a bee that has gathered too much honey. I need hands outstretched to take it. I should like to give it away and distribute it until the wise among men have again become happy in their folly and the poor happy in their wealth. To that end, I must descend into the depths, as you do at the evening when you go behind the sea and bring light to the underworld too. Superabundant star. Like you, I must go down, as men to whom I want to descend call it. So bless me then, tranquil eye, that can behold without envy even an excessive happiness. Bless the cup that wants to overflow, that the waters may flow golden from him and bear the reflection of your joy over all the world. Behold, this cup wants to be empty again, and Zarathustra wants to be man again." Thus began Zarathustra's down-going.
When Zarathustra was 30 years old, he left his home and the lake of his home and went into the mountains. It has to be explained to you that Gautam Buddha left his palace when he was 29 years old. Jesus started his teaching when he was 30 years old. Zarathustra went into the mountains when he was 30 years old. There is something significant about 30 years or near about. Just as at the age of 14, one becomes sexually mature. If we take life as it has been taken traditionally, that it consists of 70 years, those who have watched life very deeply have found that every 7 years there is a change, a turning. The first 7 years are innocent. The second 7 years, the child is very much interested in inquiring, in questioning, curiosity. After 14th to 21st year, he has the most powerful sexuality, the highest peak of sexuality. You will be surprised to know is just near about 18 or 19 years. And humanity has been trying to avoid that period by giving educational programs, colleges, universities, keeping boys and girls apart. And that is the time when their sexuality and their sexual energy is at the highest point. In those 7 years from 14 to 21st, they could have experienced sexual orgasm very easily. And sexual orgasm is a glimpse which can create in you the urge to find more blissful spaces. Because in sexual orgasms, two things disappear. Your ego disappears, your mind disappears, and time stops. Just for a few seconds. But these three are the important things. Two things disappear completely. You are no more I. You are but there is no sense of the ego. Your mind is there, but there are no thoughts. A deep stillness. And suddenly, because the ego disappears and the mind stops, time stops too. Because to experience time, you need changing thoughts of the mind. Otherwise, you cannot experience the movement of time. Just think of two trains moving into empty space together with the same speed, and whenever you look outside the window, the other train, the same window, the same number of compartments, you will not experience that you are moving. Neither the other train passengers will experience that they are moving. You experience movement because when your train is moving, the trees are standing, the houses are standing, they are not moving. Stations come and platforms come and pass. It is because on both the sides things are static, that against them, in relativity, you can feel your train moving. And sometimes you may have experienced a very bizarre thing. Your train is standing on the platform, another train is standing by the side, your train starts moving and you are looking at the other train, and it seems as if the other train has started moving. Unless you look towards the platform which is standing. Movement is a relative experience. When mind is not having any thoughts, you are in an empty sky. Time stops because you cannot judge time without movement. You are not there, mind is not there, time is not there, and tremendous peace and a great relaxation. My own understanding is it was the sexual orgasm that gave the first idea to people about meditation. Because few geniuses must have tried that if we can stop thoughts, if we can drop the ego, and if the mind is not there, time disappears, then there is no need for any sexual orgasm. You can have the same orgasmic experience alone. And it is no more sexual. It becomes an spiritual experience. The sexual orgasm must have given the first idea that the same experience is possible without sex. Otherwise, there is no way how man has found meditation. Meditation is not a natural phenomenon. Sexual orgasm is a natural phenomenon. But all the societies are preventing their children to experience sexual orgasm. Nobody says anything about it. This is a strategy, a very dangerous strategy, a criminal act against the whole humanity. Because the children who are deprived of having sexual orgasm will never be able to feel the urge for meditation. Or their urge will be very weak. They will not risk anything for it. So up to the age 21, sex reaches to its peak. If it is allowed as it was allowed in Gautam Buddha's life, all the beautiful girls of his kingdom were given to him. He was surrounded by all the beautiful girls. He knew deep experiences of orgasm. Then from 21st to 28th, the other 7 years, one searches. Because sexual orgasm is biological. Soon you will lose the energy and you will not be able to have the orgasm. Secondly, it is dependent on somebody else. A woman, a man. It is destructive of your freedom. It is at a very high cost. So if a man grows very naturally, is allowed to grow naturally, from 21st to 28th, he will search and seek ways and means how to transcend physiology, biology, and yet remain capable of moving into deeper orgasmic experiences. From 28th to the age 35, all these people, Gautam Buddha, Zarathustra, Allautasu, Chuangtasu, Jesus, all have moved in higher planes of being. And just not to be bothered, not to be hindered by people, not to be distracted, they moved into the mountains, into aloneness. According to me, it was not against life. They were simply searching a silent space where there are no distractions and they can find the greatest orgasmic experience, what William James has called the oceanic orgasm, in which you completely disappear into the ocean of existence, just like a dewdrop is slipping from a lotus leaf into the ocean. So the year 30 is not just incidental. All great seekers have left in the search between 28th and 35. That is the period of seeking, searching. Searching something that is not of the body, but of the spirit. Here, he had the enjoyment of his spirit and his solitude, and he did not weary of it for 10 years. He remained in the mountains for 10 years. His solitude silence, peace became deeper and deeper, and he was full of bliss. Although he was alone, but he was not weary of it. But at last his heart turned, and one morning he rose with the dawn, stepped before the sun, and spoke to it thus. This is where Zarathustra takes a new path. Mahavira remained in his solitude. Buddha remained in his aloneness. then the people who were watching, they saw something has happened, something beyond their conceptions. These people were transformed. They had become luminous. They were radiating joy. They had a certain fragrance. They have known something. Their eyes has a depth that was not before there, and their faces had a grace that was a totally new phenomenon. And a very subtle misunderstanding happened. The people who were watching thought that because these people went into the mountains, they renounced life. Hence, renouncing life became a fundamental thing in all the religions. But they had not renounced life. I would like to write the history completely from the very scratch, particularly about these people, because I know them from my own inside. I don't have to be bothered about facts. I know the truth. These people had not gone against life. They had gone simply for solitude. They have gone for being alone. They had gone just away from distractions. But the difference between Gautam Buddha and Zarathustra comes at the point that Gautam Buddha once found himself, never declared that now there is no need for me to be a recluse, to be a monk. I can come back and be an ordinary man into the world. Perhaps it needs more courage than going out of the world. Coming back to the world needs more courage. Going up a hill is arduous, but very gratifying. You are going higher and higher and higher. And once you have reached to the highest peak, it needs tremendous courage to come back downward into the dark valleys again which you had left. Just to give the message to people, that you need not remain always in darkness, that you need not remain always in suffering and in hell, because this downward journey may be condemned even by those people whom you are going to help. When you were going upward, you were a great saint. And when you are coming downward, people will think perhaps you have fallen. You have fallen from your greatness, from your height. It needs certainly the greatest courage in the world. After touching the heights of ultimate to be again ordinary. Zarathustra shows that courage. He is not worried about what people will say, that he will be condemned, that they will think he has fallen from heights, that he is no more a saint. His concern is more to share his experience to those who may be ready, receptive, available. They may be few, and one morning he rose with the dawn, stepped before the sun, and he spoke to it thus, "Great star, what would your happiness be if you had not those for whom you sign?" The implication of this statement is great. Zarathustra is saying, the birds are happy because the sun has risen. The flowers are happy because the sun has risen. The whole planet seems to be happy, awake, full of energy. Full of hope for the coming day. The sun has risen. But he is indicating in this statement that the sun also must be happy. Because so many flowers have blossomed. So many birds are singing. If there were no birds and no flowers, and there was nobody waiting for it, the sun would have been set. The implication is clear. We are all interconnected. The whole existence is interconnected. Even the smallest blade of grass is connected with the greatest star in the sky. those connections are not visible. It is known that if sun does not rise one day, all life from the planet will disappear. Without sun's heat and life-giving energy, nothing can remain alive here. But the mystics have always indicated about the other possibility too. If the whole life disappears from the earth, the sun will not rise. For whom? Zarathustra is saying that I am full of joy, full of peace, now I need somebody to receive it. I am overburdened. I have to share it. Otherwise, even blissfulness will become too heavy. Even blissfulness can become painful if unshared. A great star, what would your happiness be if you had not those for whom you sign? You have come up here to my cave for 10 years. You would have grown weary of your light and this journey without me, my eagle and my serpent. Zarathustra has two symbols, the eagle and the serpent. The serpent represents wisdom. And the eagle represents courage, to fly into the unknown without any fear. He had with himself the eagle and a serpent. One needs to be as conscious, as wise, as intelligent as possible. And one needs also the courage to go on entering into the unknown and finally into the unknowable. The jump into the unknowable is the jump into the godliness of existence. But we waited for you every morning, took from you your superfluity, and blessed you for it. Whatever you have given to us was superfluous to you. You had too much of it. You were burdened with it. You wanted somebody to share it. And we have taken from your superfluous, abundant energy, overflowing energy, and we have blessed you for it. Behold, I am weary of my wisdom. In the same way as you are weary of your light and you want somebody to share it, I am weary of my wisdom. It is too much. I cannot contain it anymore. I have to find someone to share. I have to unburden myself. This is such a great insight that even wisdom can become a burden. Zarathustra is absolutely right. Like a bee that has gathered too much honey, I need hands outstretched to take it. I should like to give it away and distribute it. Until the wise among men have again become happy. In their folly. This can be said only by someone who had known. An ordinary person who is simply learned, who has borrowed knowledge, cannot conceive even the idea. Nietzsche is saying through Zarathustra I am going amongst men to share and to distribute and to unburden myself of my wisdom. Until the wise among men have again become happy in their folly. The truly wise is not serious. He is playful. Because he understands the whole existence is playful. The truly wise may appear to people somewhat crazy, foolish, because the ordinary humanity has a fixed idea of the wise man that he is serious. That he cannot be playful. That he cannot laugh. That he cannot dance. These things are for foolish people. And Zarathustra is saying, I will go on sharing my wisdom until the wise amongst men have become so wise that they can accept even things which look foolish to the ordinary man. The poor happy in their wealth. Because as far as the inner wealth is concerned, the poor is as endowed by nature as any rich man. And the rich man is too much engaged with the outside world and perhaps may not find the way or the time to enter inwards. But the poor man is in a fortunate condition. He has nothing to be engaged on the outside. He can close his eyes and go in. And Zarathustra is saying, unless the wise are so wise that even foolishness becomes just playfulness, and the poor are so happy as if they have found the greatest treasure. To that end, I must descend into the depths as you do at the evening when you go behind the sea and bring light to the underworld. Supra-abundant star, like you, I must go down as man to whom I want to descend college. So bless me then, tranquil eye that can behold without envy even an excessive happiness. Bless the cup that wants to overflow, that the waters may flow golden from him and bear the reflection of your joy over all the world. Behold, this cup wants to be empty again. And Zarathustra wants to be man again. This is the rare quality of Zarathustra. There have been thousands of men who wanted to be supermen, who wanted to be Buddhas, Jinnas, Christs, Avataras, but Zarathustra is alone in the whole history who wants to be man again. Seeing the heights, seeing the depths, knowing the ultimate solitude, being full of wisdom, he wants to go down and be just a man amongst men. Not anybody superior. Thus began Zarathustra's down going.